Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. I wanted to do a podcast on the Warriors-Blazers game, and I had talked with Eric Garcia-Gunderson, who co-hosts the Locked On Blazers podcast, about doing something together, and due to our kind of own timing mishaps over the weekend, we were able to do the podcast this morning. I'm releasing this on Monday morning. We just finished recording it on the game, and then Eric wanted to talk about the CBA, because that's one of the things that I do, and I figured Warriors fans would enjoy that. We talk about it from a Blazers perspective, a Warriors perspective, and overall. So that is a part of this podcast as well. If memory serves, it's about 15 minutes on the game and about 15 minutes on the CBA. But again, that's, I think it's all relevant to what you all are interested in. So I think you'll enjoy it. Conversation as a whole runs about a half an hour, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to a December 19th, Monday morning edition of the Locked On Blazers podcast. I'm your host for the day, Eric Garcia Gunderson, and today I am joined by Locked On Warriors host. You can tell it's been a few days since I've done the podcast, Danny LaRue.
How you doing, man?
Doing good. I'm back. I was in New York for a few days, went out to a work trip out there. It was a lot of fun. I got sick beforehand, which was terrible, but I made it. I'm in one piece. I wish I could say the same for the Blazers, as they've been getting pretty beat down while I was gone. They gave up 130 to Denver, and then they gave up another 130 to the Warriors, which was a little bit more expected. But how are you, man?
I'm good. It was definitely a strange game in the sense that after Portland had that bad game against the Nuggets, I wasn't sure what to expect from the Warriors and from the Blazers in that game. When I found out Aminu wasn't going to play, it definitely made it less interesting. But the Warriors have consistently, and there's a really good reason for this, the Warriors have given the Blazers a lot of respect, and they played them like this was a game that they cared about. And that's a big part of the reason why it ended up so lopsided. And a good moment that crystallized this was, despite the Warriors being up, I think it was like about 28 points towards the end of the first half, they still went to the Draymond at center death lineup, even though the game was basically out of hand. Just as Nate Duncan has used this expression for about a year now, that the death lineup is a show of respect. That they really only use it in those circumstances, and the Blazers are deserving of that respect even when they're having an off night.
You know, that's good that the Blazers have the respect of the Warriors right now, because right now it seems like they need all the encouragement they can get. Damian Lillard going to Chris Haynes and saying that this stuff is unacceptable, and he was definitely not being PG in that description of things, and they're on the verge of a players only meeting. They haven't gotten there yet, but it's pretty clear that it seems like, at least from what Dame is saying, that, you know, he's not putting this on the coaches or a scheme or anything. I think it's execution of the scheme that they're failing at. And yeah, the Warriors do respect this team, and I think last year's playoff series definitely has a lot to do with that. But right now, I mean, the Blazers, I wonder if in some ways the playoff maybe thought that series against the Warriors last year and how good they were, maybe this is just, you know, a theory here, but not on Dame and CJ, but maybe some of the other guys, maybe they thought that they were already going to be in that place where Golden State and the Spurs and the Clippers and the Rockets are now, you know, like, because it was such an amazing story last year, and Dame mentioned being worried about guys being too content, and you know, I think he might have a point that guys maybe just aren't giving as much of a crap as they should have, or as they used to last year when they were hungrier and no one knew who they were.
It's also a challenge. I was thinking about this during the game for the Blazers, and as somebody who's covered the Warriors for years, this is definitely true for them, that your first time is always a little bit easier also if you defy expectations, because when you have an 82-game season, NBA teams just know certain teams and they focus on that and they look at it. And when somebody like the Blazers comes on a little bit later, they can get that surprise element where maybe the team was focusing on another game in that general time period. And so they can catch up on people because players watch a fair amount of basketball, but they might not see, just because of their job, they might not see as much of the league overall. So let's say they played the Blazers in January. They might not know, oh, wow, this team is really good. Now they're not surprising anybody. People not only know that they're good, but they know why they're good and how they're good and have probably spent a little bit more time figuring out how to stop them. So that is a fundamental difference and requires a little bit more from you to play the same type of way. Also, last year, they were really healthy and they haven't been as really healthy this year. I mean, it really has been a lot of more Aminu. And if we want to count Festus, we can count Festus. But that it's a challenge in that way as well, because beating high quality opponents when you're not at full strength is a real challenge, and every team struggles with that. It's part of the reason why strategic rest exists and part of the reason why it's such a big issue for the league. But in this game, there were a couple different things that really did stand out. One was that, to me, Portland's defensive failings, which were not there when they played well against Oklahoma City in another game I watched closely, it really does kind of take a team effort. And the Warriors played really well, so that has to be acknowledged. But they were letting too much penetration happen, which is more of a guard issue. And then when that issue comes, then it generally takes a really good help defense to solve that without something screwing up. So that can be either some help from the power forward or it can be the center. But one of the things the Warriors do, which is so challenging, is that they're great at making that next pass. And so sometimes just that single first seam was just creating issues at various different moments, because Portland has capable players, but they don't have those kind of like Rudy Gobert guys who can just kind of be in two places at once. And that is a lot of what help defense is against teams that can really pass. If it's only a team that can make station to station stuff, it's a little bit easier, but that's not the Warriors.
Yeah, you could definitely tell the Warriors were just getting so many shots with ease. The Blazers getting confused with switches, Clay causing problems off the ball, then they're switching, then they're miscommunicating, guys get open back door, and everything's open in the middle. And yeah, it's been pretty bad. And Aminu not being there, I've talked several times about how incredible, obviously in a small sample size, his plus minus has been, the effect that he's had on the defense when he comes on the floor. It's been a small sample size, but it's been pretty absurd according to NBA.com. But Aminu hasn't been playing that much this year. And because of that, this is, you know, small sample size, 29 games in. The Blazers' defensive rating right now would, if the season ended today, would be a top bottom eight all time in NBA history defensive rating.
Yeah,
that's how bad this team has been on defense. Like it's been, they haven't just been bad. Like they have been historically bad. And this is, I don't know where they're going to fix this, but it's getting to the point where it's like, I can't even believe that they're this bad.
A lot of that also, the reason why you see these, oh, look at something historic pace wise is happening 20, 25 games in, is because the season overall, it regresses to the mean. You know, the worst things get better, the better things get worse. It's generally the same thing with these historic offenses. The Raptors and the Warriors are both doing really well all time in those metrics. The large numbers of the season balance a lot of that stuff out, and presumably with the Blazers, they will play more with Aminu moving forward than they have so far. That certainly seems fair. But another thing I wanted to talk about, which I think has been underappreciated in the story of that game on Saturday, is the Warriors' defense played really well. And that has been a big pivot point for this season, because the Warriors' offense has been great. But they did an excellent job stopping Portland from some of the things that they do best. I mean, Lillard still had a nice night statistically, especially because he only played three quarters. He had 20 points on 15 field goal attempts. But overall, they were challenging shots, not letting the Blazers get to the line that much, and playing a good game on that end. And from what I could tell, it was more the Warriors doing well than the Blazers doing poorly, though it certainly wasn't a lot of the trademark stuff from Portland, for a good reason. They were missing Aminu, and it was, you know, especially when a team hangs, I think it was 39 points on you in the first quarter, it can get hard to really motivate yourself to go full bore offensively, too.
which happens to this team. I've ranted about this to Dane Carbaugh several times, and it's become known as my biggest pet peeve of the Blazers. The 30-point quarter is this team's plague that they just cannot kill. Like, every game, and the last two games, they've given up three 30-point quarters in games, and they've just been it's been incredible. But I do think also they will regress, to your point, about not just getting Aminu back, but of the 29 games they've played so far this season, only 12 of them have been at home, and they're 8-4 at home. So they will get a little bit better when they get some more time at home in January, February, around Christmas time when they get back, because they're playing in Sac tomorrow, I believe. And that game is going to be the last of an 8 out of 9 stretch on the road after they'd had, you know, so they are going to get the schedule back in their favor a little bit. But so some other stuff happened while do you want to say anything else about this game or this matchup?
Yeah. One other big thing is Kevin Durant was great. This was probably his most assertive offensive game in the season so far. I don't know if that was Blazers related at all, or he just picked this moment, because Harkless did a decent enough job on him. It was just that Durant decided, okay, I'm going to do it. He scored 34 points on 13 field goal attempts. Like, that's just ridiculous. And he's an incredible player. And one of the dynamics for the Warriors this year is that Durant has been very deferential, is probably the best word for it, for through this year, you know, passing up open threes to give it to teammates and everything like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to knock a guy too much in the early season for overpassing a little bit. But everyone who's watched Durant, especially his MVP year, knows that when he's a special scorer, and when he wants to, he can get a shot because he's a massive guy. He's almost always bigger than the player who's defending him. And in this game, at certain moments, especially in the third quarter, he just went, no, I'm just going to take this shot, and just was killing everything and was doing great. And it wasn't his best defensive game, but he was still more than good enough on that end. And so it was a reminder of that, even though the Warriors have been great offensively this year, that they have at least one more gear just with Durant.
The Durant thing you mentioned reminded me of the thing you made on the point you made on the defensive end before we move on, that you've watched Durant more closely than I have. But it feels like overall his defense has been so much more consistent this season than it has pretty much at any point in his career, at least in the regular season. Like, he's looking like the guy that was playing defense against the Warriors last year in the playoffs for stretches this year.
It's a lot closer. So last year in the playoffs, he showed more defensively than I had ever seen from him before. You always have this thing with guys, especially who are long, but who are athletic too, who you think, oh man, they could be so good defensively. But usually once they hit like their mid-20s and they're not that, you kind of go, oh, well, maybe they're just not that guy. And that was sort of where I had gotten to with Durant. And then all of a sudden you see it and you go, oh yeah, okay, this is the original expectation was fair. That was almost never a regular season thing before this year. And probably about 1 in every 5 games this year that's happened. And that doesn't sound like much, but 1 in 5 compared to 1 in like 40 is a whole lot more.
Yeah, that's a major increase in what he's doing. Yeah, I know. And it was funny, Durant still getting to that other gear. When I was in New York, I was meeting with a buddy of mine, my buddy Sam. He's like, I haven't watched the Warriors at all this year. And I just told him, I was like, you know what? You should do it, because it's exactly what it sounds like. It's Kevin Durant on the Warriors.
Yeah, and it looks like he's having a lot of fun. Like, as much as that sounds like a small point, and it kind of is in other ways, the whole team is just, they're happy. And it's a lot easier to be happy when you're winning. And I like that he looks like he has a real connection with some of the bench guys on this team. He gets happier in many ways for when Ian Clark does something good than when he does something good himself. And that's a kind of a trademark for the Warriors. It happened a lot. If they had a bench cam for the Klay 60-point game, that was something that was really true in that one, where Curry was happier. Like, he ran into the tunnel after a great Klay Thompson play. And Curry always gets the crowd going on his stuff, but I've noticed that Curry, a lot of times when he does that for his own success, it's more that kind of crowd motivation rather than him celebrating his own success. But when it's a teammate, he just goes nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, Warriors, they've been super, super fun to start the season. A lot more fun than I think people anticipated so soon. But there were some other changes, transitioning from Blazers-Warriors game stuff. There was some other news that happened while I was out that I wanted to address, and I'm thankful to have CBA expert Danny LaRue here with me. The NBA and the Players Association agreed to a new collective bargaining agreement. There are some changes in there. I believe there's going to be 2 two-way contracts per team that players can swing between the D League and the NBA. So I'm sure that that's going to affect every team. And then there's also some new incentivized extension structures. Danny, does the Blazers had a lot of their guys already signed to extension, so I'm going to start with them first. How much that extension stuff doesn't really affect the Blazers much, does it?
Not really. They're pretty much set because they signed CJ and Dame's already on his extension already. And a lot of the other nuances were ways of making it, basically making it harder on teams who have cap space to use all of it. So they raised minimum salaries, they raised certain cap hold things, all that sort of stuff. But Portland's over the cap anyway, so it doesn't really affect them at all. The two-way contract thing absolutely will, because that, you know, that's a door that's now open for everybody. It's exciting to see how all that works out. But Portland, them and arguably maybe Cleveland, are probably the two teams that are least affected by a lot of the nuance of the CBA. It's not everything, you know, we'll have to see how some of it works out. But the Blazers are pretty much the Blazers, and that's fine. You know, I think that's kind of, then when they bought in over the summer, that was what they were doing to a degree, was taking out that variance. And considering the timeline they were under, that was completely fine.
Yeah, again, everyone is harping on the Blazers for their bad start, and it has been a rough start. But, you know, they've had some bad injury luck. They have had a really tough schedule to start the season, and they're still a couple games ahead right now of their pace from last year. So I think they're still in a pretty good spot, and it seems like the Lakers and the Kings are who we thought they were in terms of teams maybe making the playoffs. So it looks like they have a little bit of cushion. Obviously, the Kings are kind of right behind the Blazers, but I think they will be fine. And yeah, the CBA doesn't really affect any extensions. And the only thing I think that it will affect is Mason Plumlee's restricted free agency, which that is now no longer a 3-day deadline, right? That's a 2-day deadline.
It's 2 days. So that's a little bit different. They also, it sounds like they tightened up the timeline in terms of withdrawing a qualifying offer. I doubt that's going to happen with Mason Plumlee, because that only really happens with guys who are lower than him. Like, you know, Tyler Zeller, I don't think had that happen last year. Jared Sullinger did. And so those types of circumstances. But basically, if you do that, you're letting a guy go for nothing. So I doubt that's going to happen with Mason. There's no good reason for it. So yeah, the Blazers are in that. But it affects everyone, because anything that affects the dynamics of the league, you know, that teams in their division, teams in their conference are going to be affected. And so it bounces through that. And also, one really exciting thing, which is a CBA nerd thing, but it's something that Tom Ziller, I give a lot of credit to for beating the drum on this, but they fixed it, is they're still going to have a moratorium. It sounds like it's going to be 5 days, but teams are going to know the actual salary cap number at the start of the moratorium. So it's not this circumstance where they're negotiating all these contracts in the abstract and then have to tweak them slightly once the audit's done. Apparently they're going to have the audit done before free agency starts, which is just good for everybody, because then everybody knows the playing field you're working from. And instead of having these negotiations, then going, oops, we have an extra $500,000 in cap space we could have used. Oh, never mind. Like, now teams can actually know that going in.
Yeah, that's good. It seems like, yeah, at least on this time around, it seems like they're doing a little bit better at getting their ducks in a row in a more logical way when it comes to the free agency and stuff like that in the CBA. Yeah, the CBA just got done on Thursday. Any other big things from that? That any changes that you found interesting or things that you know, you really focused in on when you heard about it? Like, wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah, a couple things. So one is they fixed the extension system, which was the biggest problem with the CBA. It worked for the Blazers. They got CJ and Lillard on it. But for a lot of players, because the Blazers guys were younger, players like Kevin Durant, incidentally, couldn't sign extensions under the old deal because the structure didn't allow for it because the cap rose so fast. That's fixed now. And they actually added this stronger max for guys in the 70-year experience range who are good enough to get the real 35% max like LeBron can get. So Stephen Curry's actually going to make a lot more money because of this deal. That's one thing. But I'm also, one of the most interesting things, this just came out, this I just saw it this morning from Eric Pincus of Basketball Insider's piece, is that if for prior CBAs, if let's say you had a player who had a light guarantee on a full deal, so like Aaron Aflalo next year, I think he has a $12 million contract, but only $1.5 million of it is guaranteed. So in terms of trade values and matching money and all that, his salary for that was $12 million. Now it's $1.5. So teams aren't going to be able, it's going to be a very different sort of trading system. So you're not going to get those circumstances where like a team trades, basically tries to dump salary in that way. So they match salary and then just basically cut the guy. It's very different. I'm not exactly sure if it's going to work in the way they want it to, but I'm excited about it because anytime you change the rules in that sort of a way and teams are going to have to feel their way through it, especially as lightly guaranteed contracts have become so trendy, the Blazers actually have one of those in Festus Ezeli. Granted, that's probably not going to matter, sadly, because of the recent news with him, but those sorts of circumstances are going to happen now. So you're just sitting there going, huh, because maybe sometimes a team is going to trade a small asset for a guy that maybe that team would have cut. But now they're like, well, I can basically get that guy for free, and then maybe they keep him. That could happen a little bit now, too, whereas before they would probably just cut that guy or whatever else would happen with that. So we'll see how a lot of that kind of stuff works out, but it's going to be fun. And I'm also really happy, this is a small thing, but not only did they raise the rookie scale and all of that sort of stuff, because those guys have been getting underpaid for a long time, but they also retroactively will raise salaries for guys that are on those rookie scales for future seasons. So like Dan Feldman of NBC's Pro Basketball Talk did the math, and Ben Simmons, who was the number one pick last year, is going to make $27 million more now than he was before, but that $27 million doesn't count against the Sixers cap, so it doesn't hurt their ability to get new guys.
That's really interesting. That's a good little tweak. Yeah, because those guys, I mean, rookie contracts have been historically, you're stealing at that point with rookie contracts, because you're getting guys that are all-star level producers that are getting paid less than guys on benches. And that's a good tweak that they made there in the CBA. Obviously that stuff doesn't kick in until July 1st of 2017, right?
Right, which is one of those disappointments that I actually had. I think Nate Duncan, who I do the Dunked On Basketball podcast with, had an idea that I really liked of being able to at least allow the extension system to kick in now, because then certain players could have been eligible, and that would have been nice. It would have hurt teams that are trying to get new free agents, like basically everybody who wants to try to get Gordon Hayward. But I think it would have been kind of fair, because those players were living under a completely unjust regime, and to just be like, oh, well, we're fixing it, but not for you. I think that's kind of it's not unfair, because either way it was going to be kind of screwed up, but that would have been nice. I think at that point you might as well just reach out to those guys and say, yeah, we're kind of sorry. And they didn't do that. It sounds like from what I'm hearing, they're not going to do that. And I understand why, because all the teams with cap space this year were going to cry bloody murder if that happened, like the Celtics would cry bloody murder. But I think that would have been fair. So it's a personal preference thing, but that's the way that I would have gone with it. And yeah, it's going to be exciting just to see it. And one thing I caution people with always, as somebody who has gone through this before, because I was covering the NBA when the last CBA came out, is be ready for some of the stuff to change a little bit from what is actually in the current agreement to now, but to the way it's reported, just because the CBA is incredibly complicated and sometimes it's going through a filter between now. And so basically everything is kind of in this general state right now, but nothing is certain until it's ratified, which will probably happen in the next couple weeks. And then the actual thing gets released. And then people who are giant nerds who will go through the whole thing, like I will probably 3 or 4 times, really read it and make sure, because every once in a while you can get a misinterpretation. It won't affect the Blazers probably, but just remember that nothing is final until it's final.
Yeah, no, that's a good reminder. Whenever this lockout stuff, CBA stuff, we're all still figuring it out, but there are some interesting things. I think it'll definitely make the draft a lot more interesting, especially things like the second round, because then you're looking at guys teams can keep. If teams have a 15-man roster, they can invest in some prospects. perhaps if they had that 16th, 17th man spot, perhaps the Blazers keep someone like Luis Montero in their system to keep developing him in the D League or something like that. And so, it's really interesting what's happening with the CBA. I think it's all very good changes, smart changes to the collective bargaining agreement. But again, we're just finding out, just starting to wrap our heads around what those changes are going to be. Anything on the Warriors side of things that you think the CBA might affect? It seems like obviously Steph is going to be able to get more money in free agency, but what stands out to you from their perspective? Obviously, them being the marquee team we're all looking at.
There is one big thing that affects them, and basically, I've been keying on this back since I think I wrote the first piece on this point in October back at the Sport News, which is Durant is basically facing a choice of he's probably going to sign a 1-year deal either way, just in my opinion, because he won't want to sign a long-term one because he can't get those bigger raises, because you can't get that until you've been on a team for a couple years. But he basically has to choose between it's about $31.5 million to sign as what's called a non-bird free agent. So basically then the Warriors stay over the cap and then they can retain guys like Iguodala and Livingston. And so the question was, where was his max going to go? So basically how much money would he have to leave on the table if he wanted to choose that? And so because of the way they changed max calculations, it went up to about $36 million. So now if he wanted to do that, and he certainly can, now he's sacrificing $4.5 million to basically have better teammates. I legitimately don't know if he's going to do that, but that's really his choice. So he can either play for $36 million and probably the Warriors lose Iguodala and Livingston, or he can play for $31.5 million or so and they can keep those guys assuming they resign. So that's a big question for the whole league, because in terms of competitive balance, the Warriors will be a lot better, the Warriors will be a lot worse. Also, it affects how much the Warriors pay in the luxury tax in the future and a lot of other stuff. So it'll be very interesting to see what that is. And there's really no way to spin it for Durant. Basically, he makes one choice or he makes the other. There isn't really a lot of ways to sugarcoat it if he chooses to maximize his own money.
Is there, you just reminded me of something real quick. Any changes to the luxury tax structure?
Not that I've seen, which is a little bit of a surprise. The only big difference, which isn't a luxury tax structure issue, and again, this probably won't affect the Blazers, is that they raised the apron. So basically what the apron is it's an area where you are paying the luxury tax, but you're not affected by the limitations of the luxury tax. So this is actually where the Clippers have lived for the last couple of years. So basically, if you pay less than, it's been $4 million under the current CBA, if you are less than $4 million over the line, you could still use the full mid-level exception, you could still do some of the other team-building stuff, but basically that puts a hard cap on you. Now they're elevating that to $6 million because basically the cap rose so much, they're like, it's not fair to keep that line the same place. They rose it. They elevated it. Sorry, they didn't rose it. So they did that. We'll see if that really affects anybody moving forward, because it's just that's a hard area to kind of be in. But it does something. But other than that, it sounds like from what I've heard, but the luxury tax hasn't gotten a lot of reporting yet. So that's something that could be. Oh, and the other big thing that affects the luxury tax is there is no amnesty provision. So that was a way that teams could cut salary, and then if you know you still have to pay the guy, but it wouldn't count against the tax or the salary cap. There is no luxury tax. There's no get out of jail free card in the CBA.
All right. Well, the all those contracts that you give out, you're not going to get any take back skis anymore. So any Blazer fans wanting to take back skis on any of their free agents, you're not going to get to do it. So we're not there yet. Maybe.
It doesn't matter if you're there yet or not. You can't do it. So
can't do it. Yeah. So we'll just yearn for the old times of the amnesty when they had to use it on Brandon Roy.
Oh, wow. You somehow made that even more depressing. I have to give you credit for that. You turned Evan Turner into Brandon Roy's amnesty, which is impressive.
Yeah. We're getting dark on a Monday.
Thanks again to Eric Garcia Gunderson for taking the time to talk with me. It was a really fun conversation. You can listen to him doing great work on Locked On Blazers. He often hosts with Dane Carbaugh, who I enjoy quite a bit as well. You can also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Gunderson. That's ERIK_GUNDERSEN. Great follow on there, Blazer stuff and just generally overall. Really did enjoy talking with him and getting into some of the CBA stuff. Still trying to figure out exactly what I want to do in terms of the CBA during this weird interim time when we don't know exactly what's going down, because we're getting closer and there's more. Eric Pincus, for those of you who haven't read it, did some great work for Basketball Insiders over the weekend, putting some of it together, and then Tim Bontemps and lots of other great people. Woj has some stuff. So we don't know everything yet, and some of the stuff we don't know does affect the Warriors, but there's still plenty. So I'm still exactly trying to figure out where I want to go with all this, but plenty to talk about, and was happy to go into the game with Eric because it was a dominant performance by the Warriors, one of their better ones of the year. You can also read my write-up for it is at The Athletic. That went up last night. So lots going on with this team. Still have another home game against the Utah Jazz on Tuesday, and then that will lead into a big road trip. They face the Nets, they face the Pistons, and then, of course, the Christmas Day game. So we will see how all of that goes. And Locked On Warriors will, of course, go strong throughout all that. Still trying to figure out my exact timing during this week. It's a holiday week, so that means some of you are less available. Definitely means I'm less available, but we'll still have plenty of good content for you. Definitely doing something on the Jazz game. Maybe not on the Nets one, just depending on my own timing, but we will figure all that out, of course, as time goes. But it's a Monday, so it's also a good time for those of you who are NFL fans to listen to Locked On NFL or any of the other NFL podcasts for whatever team you're into. If you're a Raiders fan, congratulations. They just clinched a playoff berth for the first time in a while. I think about 10 years. And Niners fan, you can listen if you want, but it lost to the Falcons, of course. So you can check that out, or of course, if you're a fan of different teams. And you can also check out Locked On NBA and Locked On Fantasy Basketball. David Locke and Josh Lloyd do a great job with those. So you can check that out. If you have any feedback for me, good, bad, and different, Danny LaRue, NBA at gmail.com, or Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux. Really do appreciate it. You can also leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe to every episode, download every episode. All of those things really do help this show or any other shows that you like. And checking out sponsors for us at the moment, that is SeatGeek and Mack Weldon. And if you want more info on that, you should be able to either, you can ask me, or I can, or you can listen to previous podcasts. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.